This is CliffCentral.com.
Ringo Madlingosi is established in South Africa as a popular brand. 10 studio albums, 2 live CD DVDs, 1 compilation album. Ringo is destined for even greater things, though. He works his way up the music ladder. His latest studio album is out now, currently preparing for a one-night-only performance at the South African State Theatre. That's happening at the end of this month, 30th of September. Tickets for the show can be purchased at CompuTicket for between 150 if you are cheap, to 350 if you're prepared to pay. He's originally from Googs in the Western Cape, and he spent his childhood and the school days in Gugulethu Township, finished high school in Umtata in the Eastern Cape. And he's here with us this morning. His real name is Sindile, but we call him Ringo Madlingosi. How are you, Mr. Madlingosi? How are you, sir?
It's a sharp man.
Nice to see you, man.
It's COVID.
You know what? The last time I saw you was on Idols when we were doing that together. Remember
When the Jagman was doing my song.
Well, yeah, we did your song. One of them was singing your song. And then also once before that when your son Pile was in it.
Yeah.
So we've met once or twice before.
Actually, that platform created a very, the great one for him, actually, because now he's performing live and,
Yeah, he has. He's got your talent, obviously.
Is it a lot of pressure for him, though, to follow, to maybe feel like he needs to follow in your footsteps?
If he fails, Ringo is going to kick him out and he'll never talk to him.
Well, I said to him, listen, man, this business that you are getting into is not easy, it's a doggy dog world, yeah, so please don't think that I will come and save you, because I said, okay, I know the guys that Gareth and them. Listen, I'm not gonna go there and say, man, please, man, this is my child. I said, no, you're on your own, man.
Well, he didn't come up and tell us. We had to find out afterwards he was your son. But we talk about Idols and we talk about these shows that make careers. But really, for so many South Africans in the 1980s, there was no way to break into the music business. And there was this show called Shell Road to Fame, which was a massive show. And it had the power to make superstars in those days.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you entered that show, it was 1986, right?
96, yes.
How old were you then?
I was 22.
Yeah. And it was your first time on television?
Well, at that time, it wasn't television, basically.
It was a road show.
It was more like a road show on. And remember, those times, they were very, very few, black people on TV. So you wouldn't find me there.
I think it was just Alice Chavunduka. There was no.
Yeah. Well, but as we say, that's when, people get to, know about us and, perform and we're fresh from school, get on stage, doing acrobatics, and all that. And I started, 85, but I was I couldn't make it, as a solo. So I came in as a group.
Yeah, you came in with Peto. Peto, who's still with you, huh? Sometimes.
You mean now?
No, but you stayed together for a long time, yeah.
Yeah, well, after we won 86, up until 1990, we started to part ways.
Yeah.
We were a group of, youngsters. Some were like doing jazz from the jazz workshop in Cape Town. And, I was there, as it was my passion to sing, that's all, so I love singing. And so I wasn't part of the crew as doing jazz. So as we, get into this thing and getting bigger, so the guys were more getting deeper into jazz, I was going more into reggae.
they probably became purists, jazz purists, and that's a different direction. Not necessarily very commercial direction, right?
Exactly. And that's what we always say, guys, what are we here for? If it is not making moolah, so why are we doing it? People go like, no, this is your, I want to do music.
Express myself.
this is how it is, you know, this is this is real music. So no, but every music is music, you know, and yeah, but otherwise I learned a lot from, you know, from the guys.
You know, those people, we can't be completely put off by them, because they are the people who drive the music itself. They are the ones who make great session musos often. They're the ones who will play in little bars to 15 people, and they to them that's okay because those are the right people for them. For you though, that was never enough.
No, and moreover, you know, Gareth, I must just say it, because I was you know, not the youngest, but I was one of the young. In fact, we're all like the same age, but you know, I was more there was more passion for me to do this, and I was always, you know, in the forefront, you know, and I started to drive without a license then, because I mean the guys would be, you know, lazy, so I would go to the one that has got a car, then I pick up the car and collect all of them. By the time we get together, we are already late. You know, like I would go to someone and wake him up at 7, then go wake another one 8:30. By the time we get to the interview at 9 o'clock, you know, we're late. So I thought, no, listen, I'm gonna go and do things my way. So it was more like, who told you that you are the leader of the group? Because in most of the interviews and articles, you know, newspapers, I'm the one in front, you know.
Well, talking. You were the only one doing the work.
Exactly. So I thought, well, you know. In fact, they gave me a lot more time to learn how to be my leader.
Yeah, they say some people are born great, some people are made great, and other people have greatness thrust upon them because, you know, of circumstances or whatever.
Right.
And in this case, I think for you, it's the latter two. You didn't think you were born to be amazing. You might have discovered that later on in life. But it was kind of like you just stood up and you did the work.
I had to do it, you know, because I thought, listen, if I don't do it, and I must say, give credit to also Alan Cameron. I mean, he was always there, you know, like, because I would call him from Google and say, hey, bro, I'm coming over, because there were no cell phones then. So he loved to wait for me, you know, because I don't have, don't be any communication, you know, take, you know.
On the way, you didn't have cell phones. You know how it is, of course.
And yeah, so without him and me, definitely there wouldn't be, you know, the group that was.
Now, growing up in Guguletu in those years, I mean, what kind of a place was it? Was there a lot of music there? Was there a kind of feeling of community, or was it very, very tough?
Google did that. I remember one time while I was, you know, still a youngster, they said that it was, you know, the roughest place in the world, and hence we call it Kakiad, you know. That's So I mean, growing up there and one, you know, learned to how to, you know, to be himself, you know, and yesterday there was a lot of love within, you know, my family, and you know, the unity, and also, you know, wanting to be somebody, you know, against all odds, you know, and that was what pushed me, you know, into doing things that others were not very keen in doing. And yes, Google too, yeah, you know, I remember one time, you know, I was fresh from the mountain, you know. In my culture,
you just had you were a man. You came down from the mountain. You were a man. You went up. You know, you were a boy.
From a boy to be a man.
Initiation.
You know.
Gotcha.
So, you know, I had new clothes. Everything is new. You know, new hair. Everything. Mm-hmm. So, you know, walking around the street, you know, like with my new me, and this guy, you know, came in this, you know, rushed me up and hit me with a beer bottle. If you see the scars and all that, I was like, I'm new, and I'm like, wow. So
some adulthood this is.
No. just you know, just crazy guys that don't care.
They steal your stuff?
No.
They just beat you up for no good reason?
So that, you know, you look good. Why?
Yeah, in other words, we're going to pull you down because we're unhappy.
Why are you looking good? Who do you think you are?
Yeah,
you know, that's crazy stuff like that. You know, so such things, you know, such experiences, you know, make one understand and know that, hey, you got to stand for yourself. Otherwise, you cannot just walk around and think you're the man. You must actually look behind you and all around you as you're walking. So, yeah.
So it's almost like they force humility on you, right?
The minute you get, I don't know what the minute humility is. It's more like getting the worst out of you. You know, like, I mean, here you are, you know, mind your own business, you know, thinking that everything is fine, and then all of a sudden you have to be like a thug with an okapi in your back pocket. You know, it's like, okay.
But you didn't want to be that guy.
No.
You wanted to do your music.
You know, make people happy. But that's what I always do, you know. I was doing actually at school. I remember during the short breaks, you know, in my lower primary school. So what I would do is I'm always humming songs, singing, you know, from listening to radio. So the girl's like, oh, Ringo, please, can you sing me that song? yeah, for sure. You know, I'm always that human jukebox.
Yeah.
I'll get there and sing, you know, get all those little, you know, coins.
Is it true that your mother gave you the nickname Ringo?
Yeah.
Because you were singing and drumming all the time.
From within her first.
Wow. Before you were even born, you were drumming.
Wow. You know, like every time I would hear music, I'll start, you know, dancing, you know.
And that stuck, huh? So when it came to actually coming up with your artist name, that was the one you went with.
Well, you know, about the I grew up being called Ringo. My grandmother, you know, was calling me. I don't know who actually instilled it, like, but my mother said because at that time the Beatles were big.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I was there drumming.
Now, you mentioned Alan Cameron earlier, and you guys had a band called Gecko Moon.
Yes, right?
And this was a very important band. You had a crossover track there that really made a huge difference in
Green Green,
making you big. Yeah, that's Green Green.
Yes, yeah, right. So it was a cover from Maguire and Spark. It's more for rock and roll song. Mm-hmm. So we took it and did reggae on it. You know, people loved it. It was more of a turntable hit, man, but there wasn't.
I mean, those were the days where you could have a turntable hit and it would be a major thing. You know, it would propel you into the stratosphere, because after that, you started working with people like Brahu Masekela Simply Red, Teddy Pendergrass.
Mick Hagnell,
a
lovely guy.
I mean, this is amazing. Where did you meet Brahu for the first time?
I when they were coming back from exile.
Yes.
There was the concert that they were doing. You know, himself, Kefa Semenya, the late Mama Miriam, Mama Letambul, and Jonas Kwango. They were doing that. I would say Sikunjal. I think it was. I'm not quite sure. It might be wrong, but we did some backings there. But then I pull off quick. I always wanted to be in front, not in the back.
Yeah. being a backup singer is very hard.
And you know, but still, I also did later on. Still, I backed them up. You know, the late Jabu Kanyile, Dolora Tebe, the late. Wow, it's like late people. Hugh Masekela and Kwangwa. Who else? Yeah, but
Kaifas. You mentioned Kaifas earlier as well.
No.
Letambul.
No, they were not there. But it was Bushim Klongo, the late.
Oh wow! Okay.
So we went to Paris. So we were performing in Parc de la Villette. So during that time, that month that we were doing shows there, I thought to myself, no man, I listened to the group performing, and I'm there backing them all, and I'm looking at the audience. I thought, no man, I wish I could, you know, if I can be there in front, this is what I would do, because I can read the audience, you know, how they are, what they're doing. I'm like, no. So when I came back, I said, no, I'm doing it now. I'm coming up with my own self, with my music and everything. Actually, it was the late Mama Bosim Klongo, you know. She said, yeah, Nganeyam, you know what? I love your voice. You must stand in front. I don't feel good, you know, hearing you backing me up. I want you in front.
Wow.
You know, like, wow.
And for an artist to do that for another artist is a very big deal.
Oh, for sure, you know.
Because you know that your job, if you're a backup singer, is to shut up and stay at the back,
you know,
and sing when you're expected to, and let the light shine on the yep. person in the front. And for Busim Hlongo to say that to you, that must have come from a place of love.
Oh, for sure. And you know, that's why in all my DVD Live 1 at the State Theater and DVD Live 2, she was there. She said, no, I'm not going to miss this. The first and the second one. Excuse me. And the most beautiful part of it was like she gave her all. Mm. You know, on the second one, she was very, very sick. You know, she was on morphine, you know, because of the breast cancer. But she got there and do it. But, you know, on the visuals, you know, one don't see it. But when she go backstage and, you know, she relaxed, I'm like, before she goes, like, I ask, Mama, are you sure you want to go and do this? She said, I'm doing it. I want to do it.
Did you also contribute to the soundtrack for The Lion King?
We were called by Ulan label. They were very like, you know, at that time I had a group, but we were four of us, the Late Wings Khale, Zamambuto, Sipongumalu. We were doing mostly jingles,
mm-hmm.
you know, for most of these products,
for radio, for ads,
yes, and everything, kind of, you know, right. So we were very popular as the Fourth Street. We were called Fourth Street. Our harmony is beautiful. We were doing it. So also label wanted us to be there also, you know, to give in and work. And he knew that when we get there, you know, we're always very much, we have passion for it, you know. You know, in these adverts, you know, when artists are called to do, you know, jingles, you know, they'll be called and then they'll be given, this is blah blah blah, you know, sing it like this, and they will just do the job. You know, whatever it is. But then what we did, we just put on more effort.
Energy. Remember that.
You know, oh, and there was the other one, the of a cough mixture that we did. And
remind me. That's great.
Yeah, you know.
Wow.
That's yeah, so, but,
so yeah, we did that, and you know, that was I think you know, I think it was Bones Brettel, you know, that did that. But we did the music. I would say I did it, because that was what I was doing, you know.
Sure.
It was just coming from within, you know. So I just go to the guys, hey, let's harmonize here, you know. Yes, let's get this vibe. We are just around this, you know, in Baula prison, you know, we're just singing, it's cold and all that. And those days I had you know, a stint of staying at the park station for 5 days without, nobody knew where I was staying at home.
Did you just not have money?
No, at home, I didn't have a place to stay, basically. So at home, I never told them that I didn't have a place to stay. Until Makoy Mkhubada, the second player, you know, because he's my cousin, said, man, you always come here and bath and go. Where do you stay? I know, I'll stay somewhere, you know. Like,
what were you doing at Park Station?
Well, I would stay there during the day, just, you know, walk around. And then I befriended this old lady. I took my small bag and always give it to her to keep. And then when it was about 8-9 at night, I'll go to, there was a club, Countdown in Bridge Street. I'll go to that club. I dance until 3 or 4 in the morning.
So you were living it up.
And then
were just having a party.
I'm telling you, man, it was until then. I'll go to McCoy's house as if I'm coming from somewhere. So I mean, then I'll sit in the chair or in the sofa, and then I'll doze off. You realize,
what a life. This is a real pattern. Rock star life, this.
And this pattern. And then third, he said, hey, man, come on. Where do you stay? But he's my cousin. I'm going to tell. where do you stay? I said, ah, no, man, okay, no, I'll find a place, don't worry. And then I found myself a place.
And you had to clean up?
No, I found myself a girlfriend, basically.
But the girlfriend helped you clean up?
Well, no, I had to find myself someone who had a place so that I can, you know.
Crash.
Oh my God.
Sounds like crazy. You had a life, man. I mean, this is exciting stuff because also that was the 90s, right? And the 90s, there was some wild stuff going down in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we just had our first elections in 94. Things started to open up a little bit more. There were more opportunities.
Yep.
There was a nightlife. It was pretty dangerous, but there was fun to be had.
Oh, yeah, man. Beautiful. Well, you know.
Bromfontein.
I love that area. But hey, Hillbrow is crazy. Man, I'm going to tell the story of Hillbrow, man. You know, Hillbrow at that time was for cramped white guys.
Yeah.
And when they find you at night, they moor you, man. That's all. They just moor you.
So you didn't walk around there?
Oh, no,
at night.
No. You must always check, you know.
Yeah. All right, tell me more.
Tell about it. Like,
so where did you go in Brom? What were the places that you would hang out at?
Well, there was a cotton club in Hillbrow that we used to go and you know, listen to music, and there was you know, well, downtown Johannesburg, you know, where we go and listen to music, Nikkies, Oasis. But there was a time when Gekko Muno, you know, disbanded, I joined a group, Walk This Way, a multiracial group. I was doing 36 songs a night,
yeah,
six nights a week for 2 years.
That's hard work.
I'm telling you, man. And we were performing in late night Owls, if you remember that place.
No.
In Bruma.
What time would they put you on?
From 8:30 to 4:30 in the morning.
Oh my God! You had to play nonstop.
No. Well, no, with breaks. You were pretty much
on the stage until the end.
But you know, that actually, you know, was more like of a school for me, because there was no time that I could say my voice is gone.
Ringo, this is amazing because this is what Malcolm Gladwell says is the 10,000 hours.
Exactly.
When he talks about the Beatles being in Hamburg, and they used to do those sets over and over, they'd do covers and covers and covers, and they'd do their own stuff. And they piled in, I think it was in a space of a year or two, just like you.
Yeah.
Night after night, they were doing gigs.
Yeah.
And that's what made them great.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, God, what has happened is like, excuse me, let me give you that the picture. 11:30, the Kumbi, you know, hoots outside. Beep, beep, you go, get your bags and all that. We go to a rehearsal. We rehearse up until 1:00, 1:00, 2:00. And then from two to five is your free time. So I chose to go to the gym. I go to the gym. 5:00, I come back, change, go home. 6:30, the Kumbi comes and pick me up. Go 8:30, I'm live on stage.
Uh-huh.
Up until early hours of the morning. By 5:30, I'm back again, sleeping. 11:30, same thing again. On Mondays, we go and get 2 new songs that we need to learn for, because we're always wanting to be ahead of the DJs. Sure. So the management had to get songs from London and all that, you know, rock and roll songs and all those songs, man. What is that song that the you know, the people loved them? Drop Dead Beautiful.
Because she's drop dead beautiful.
Hey, they wanted me to sing that song over. I said, no, I'm tired of this song. You know, but hey, there was this club, The Dawn in Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
So this white girl was like throwing her hair like that and having fun, man. And you know, she was dancing with me.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, this guy. You know, I think he was his boyfriend. Like, you know, he's just got this beer. I don't want to call the name.
Mm-hmm.
Every time, you know, he would like, what do you call this?
Like he'd gesture. He's aggressive, I'm gonna hit you with this.
Yeah. So I would, you know, duck while I'm singing. People don't know what's going on. They think that I'm dancing, but I'm running out of
You're trying not to get hit.
You know, yeah. And
who else was in this band with you? You mentioned it was multiracial.
Well, it was John Chimoy on bass. Mela Man.
Yeah.
Who else is there? Brent Harris.
Oh wow.
Drummer. You know, I think he did work with Just Ginger.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
You know.
How many of you were there?
We were
six.
Six. Yeah, over there.
I don't know what kind of a life it was to go from that to being the sort of person who then writes and performs solo. Because it must be, when you're in a band, there's something nice about it. There's also, there are annoying things, obviously, but you've got your family with you. Because you guys were saying, you talk to me now about how you spent these hours and hours together. Eventually, you all know each other.
We know each other, and no one knows nothing extra.
Yeah.
So we're always talking about things that we all know. As a result, we're boring each other. You know, because, I mean, you come here and we're always together. So what you know is what I know.
Uh-huh.
So sometimes just look at each other like, don't look at me. You know, I'm tired. Because there's nothing to do. We're always together. So, but you know, that created the negative and positive for me right now, because I always wanted to make the guys that I'm working with to be my family, you know, and I find it very hard for them to not to put me in their house as I am doing for them, you know, to them.
Well, it must have been, were you the only one who was from out of town? Because, you know, being from Cape Town, being from Guguletu, and you come up here, they become your family because you also don't have anyone else around. You said your cousin was here, but there was no one else.
Well, in that group, in that Walk This Way, the lady that killed herself was from Mozambique. And then Mela from Greece. Okay. And the keyboard player was Mark from Pretoria, Janchi from Tembisa, the bass player, and these two girls were from, we were all like,
none of you were from here, so you all only had each other then.
You know, so.
And after that, in 96 or so, you released your first solo album, right? And that was Vugani.
Vugani, Wake Up.
Right. So at this point, do you have the confidence to be doing this on your own? Do you know what's coming?
Oh, yes.
I was just ready.
Because I've been playing this all along. I was just ready. It's just that I got disappointed that after spending all my monies that I've kept and to record this, you know, South Africans were not receptive of the music that I came, you know, dish out. It's more like they didn't like it. So I thought, what's the point? You know, and moreover, because I've been singing in English all my life until Chris Blackwell, you know, said, hey, man, why are you singing? I said, well, I want to hear myself on radio, eventually see myself on TV. I said, no, but you say you love Bob Marley, but Bob Marley was singing in his Jamaican patois, you know, like, and he was singing about places that he know. Trench Town, whatever it is, but he was talking to his people. Who are you talking to when you sing? I'm like, ish. Yeah, well, said, no, sing in your own language. Talk to your people.
That's beautiful.
You know? And when I did that, I found that maybe people don't like it. You know, they want me to sing. And just before I quit, I was like, but anyway, let me try the second one. So what I did on the second one was to, instead, because on the first one was I was talking about the social ills, talking about the foreigners coming in the country, the government not knowing what to do with them, you know, and whether, you know, they would be confused which problems to deal with first, you know, those are the songs that are the vibe that I was singing about. Until then, on the second one, I said, let me sing about love. You know, let me just serenade this girl. Say, oh, baby, I love your eyes. Oh, you're so beautiful. Oh, boom!
And suddenly it worked.
I'm telling you, man.
People were buying like hotcakes.
They just love that guy. I'm
like, oh, when you God, feel when you feel a breakthrough like that happen, it must be the most. It must be a relief, first of all, because you know that music, once you've... I mean, a lot of people struggle and struggle and struggle, and they never get there.
Yep.
And even in this country, we have stories of so many talented people who just never make it.
Yep.
So when your stuff is critically acclaimed, when people are buying it, when people love your performances, it must feel like the best thing ever.
It feels like... first, it will feel like it's not real. Like, no, these guys, you know, they're messing up with me now. And then I would realize that, you know, when old mamas come to me and like, Wanaga, baby, you know, your music heals me. I'm like, ooh.
That's special.
That, you know, that is bigger than anything, you know. And then I would realize that, okay. Now, if I'm talking to her heart, then that's it. You know, and then it become more people, you know, and also weird, you know, guys bring their women, man, please, can you kiss my woman, please, man. I'm like, hey!
It's not awkward.
I said, man, no! I said, please, man, you know, if you do that, man, I'm telling you, the whole year is good for me, man, do that.
You were basically going to get these other guys laid.
Oh!
That's what was going on.
You know,
but you speak about old mamas, yeah. and you produced Miriam Makeba for a while.
The last album, Reflections.
What was it like working with her?
Oh, you know, we would... decide to start working from 8. Then at 9, she comes in with pots of food. Said... Let us eat first. You young people, you don't want to eat. And then we should dish out. And when we will eat for the hour or two, having fun. Eat. And then later on, then she said, let's start working out at about 12 now.
Okay.
And after one or two glasses of red wine, I'm like, okay. And it will end quick because now she's tired.
But how old is she? Must have been in her 70s by then. Eh?
Yeah.
Mm.
But she knew exactly what she wanted, you know, and
she still had it, right?
Oh, voice
right up to the end.
Oh, you know, and when she started working, she just get there and she doesn't like that. Just stop. And goes. She said, "I don't like. Don't stop the music." I said, "Man, please, just don't stop the music. Please, just let it go."
But you really have worked with a lot of very big names too. Didn't you do that thing with UB40 also in the 90s?
Yeah. That was a beautiful call I got from Brian Travers.
Uh-huh. What happened?
Well, I was at the studio video lab, you know, just working there. And he got me as I was, you know, going to the shop just to go buy something. And I got this call. I said, "Hey!" And you know, there was a lot of noise, and they ring out, Ringo! Yes. Ringo, this is Brian Travers. I'm like, Brian who? Brian Travers. I'm like, I know that name. I said, "No, man. You be 40. He said, yeah. I'm like, "No, man, please don't play with me." And
you put the phone down.
Cut it off. Called again. "Hey, it's a Ringo!" Okay, this is a British accent. So yes, Ringo, what do you want? "Oh, is this Brian Travers?" And then he gave it to Ali.
The guy from the lead singer, right?
Ali Campbell, yeah.
Ali Campbell.
I could hear the voice. Damn.
So it's real.
And then the phone is starting to shake. It's like, hold on, please. I'm like, "Hello?"
And they said, "We want you to collaborate
with
us."
"No, man, you know, we heard your song and all that. We want to work with you." I'm like, and I'm sweating now. I'm like, in the middle of the road, the car's like, whoa, like, "Oh my God, let me get out from the road." And, you know, it was a vibe, you know. And and they send MP3s, you know, of the just the basic rhythm.
Right.
And then I called the guitarist and some girls to come and sing, and then we did the song then, and I put the lead, then sent it back to them.
And you did Xhosa lyrics for Cover Up, right?
Yeah.
That was the project.
Yeah. And then I called it Cappella. Cover Up Cappella. Okay. Yeah.
And then, of course, that became the UN's global AIDS awareness song.
It was beautiful. And when they came over, we were doing the tour together.
Those guys party hard.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. Oh. Did you teach them how to party hard?
Well, they taught me how to.
Really?
Oh.
I think in your prime, you must have had so much fun, man.
Well.
I mean, you're still in your prime, but, you know, when you were, you know, a wild child, you must have had such a party everywhere. So many women, so much drinking, so much partying.
Well, you know, I didn't like women that much.
You were more into the music?
I was more into music, man. You know, because to me, the women were more like they're lying to me.
Oh,
what do you want?
Temptresses.
What do you want? What do you want?
We're pretty good at it.
What do you want? Why are you here next to me? You know. But at the same time, you know, you're a man, you know, you have to be with a woman. Otherwise, damn,
sure,
it's crazy. So,
did you settle down very easily?
I didn't, you know, after having 4 kids, I thought to myself, hey, man, it's a tough world out here. You know, you got to have somebody with you now. So, I met this lady that used to you know we were from standard 8 to 10. What is it?
Great, great, so you're great, like 10, old school 12. Friends.
Yeah, but when I never knew her at that time, but you know I knew that there was this girl that was always, you know, pushing me out of, you know, in the biology and maths, you know, so we were like more into that fighting.
And competition.
I didn't want anyone to be in front of me. Why? You know? So, yes. So when I met him, like, hey, so what do you do? I thought you'd be a scientist. You know, I said, oh, well, I did, you know, this and that. And she was running, you know, this pharmaceutical company and all that, working, you know, mixing medicine, all that.
Wow.
So I said, you know, one time, you know, but I was doing this BBA, Bachelor of Business in Mill Park Business School, of which I dropped out after 2.5 years because I didn't have money now to pay. So
isn't that ironic? You're going to business school and then you run out of money in business school. And the only way for you to make the money that you've made and to make a success of yourself is to not do the business side of things.
You know, like the worst thing was like I was doing it, you know, full time.
Yeah.
I thought to myself, okay, now I've got enough money. Let me just drop this whole thing. Oh, 1-2 years down the line, I'm like, no, this is heavy now. I need money. Mm. But anyway, while I was doing that, I met her. So, you know, she helped me, you know, the assignments and everything, because the brain was a bit tired now into doing that. So I got somebody to really...
She helped you a lot.
And then I said, hey, are you having anyone with you? I said, no, let's get married, man.
You just decided there and then.
Yeah, let's just go.
And did she say yes?
Oh, yeah, we went and signed and got married.
No big deal. No big ceremony.
No, let's go.
Magistrate's court.
No, let's go. We just signed the sign and then we were married.
That's not very romantic, huh?
No. Where's the Sondela music playing in the background?
So Sia was telling me his uncle. Yeah. Sia said his uncle can't listen to Sondela anymore.
Oh.
Can't.
Why?
Got married to Sondela. And now he's divorced.
Oh.
So it just brings back all
the memories.
Of those
memories. That's the vibe. That's, you know,
it was beautiful in the moment, walking down the aisle, Sondela's playing. They even made their wedding DVD with the song.
That is why I stopped, you know, you know, doing going to these guys. When they, please, no, can you come to my wedding? I said, no, I'm not doing that.
Let me ask you one or two things, because there's been, just in the last couple of weeks, there's been some controversy. Mm. Didn't one of the newspapers say that your son had died and he's fine?
Well, yeah, you know, there's a lady in Cape Town that she is a saxophone teacher.
Yes.
And I know her from way back, you know, her son died.
Okay.
So she called me and very, very distraughted. I said, okay, hold on. Let me come over. So I was there like the whole week helping her and doing that and making sure that everything was fine. So there were some journalists there from some newspaper that is local in Cape Town. They were there, you know, sending people to go. So they thought, that was my son, blah, blah, and all that. And they, you know.
And even though you told them,
they don't
it's not
care.
My son, they don't, they're going to print
they don't
nonsense.
They're going to do that anyway. They don't care.
Wow.
It means nothing to them.
So how do you put them in their place? Social media?
No.
Did you just, when they asked you questions, you told them this is bullshit?
I just ignore that. But when I'm asked about it, then I'll tell them, listen, those guys are talking cock. They're not like that, yeah.
And the other thing about you that I read the other day was, is it true that in February of this year, you were hit by a headache?
Oh, yes, yeah.
Okay, so this was some headache because it actually made you blind and speechless for a while.
I staggered.
What happened?
I was on my third song. You know, like I
is this during a performance?
I dance a lot. I'm telling you, man. I dance, man. Check me out.
No. So you're moving on stage. You're in the third song.
Yeah, I'm performing. You know all that, and then there's a move that I would go spin around, and then look at my drama. We had something that we do. So as I went down, hit me here. So I balanced. I'm like, oh no! And then it went black. Like, okay, what's going on now? I thought, no, I'm not gonna go on stage, you know. And when I opened my eyes, I could see that, you know, the bass player was looking at me like, hey, you know, are you all right?
How long were you out for?
I don't know, maybe a few seconds, but people didn't realize that. They thought I was, you know, but they know how my move is. So I tried to get up slowly. You know the drums are on that rack, so I balanced a bit, and I staggered a bit. I thought, oh. I tried to ignore it, and then went back again, sang, carry on, hit me again.
Jesus.
I staggered back now. Because the audience, you know, like they kept quiet now. Maybe they thought, oh, something then. I walked slowly out. And the guys kept on playing, and I went outside and sat down on the floor. Like, wow, I don't know. It got hot and what, and there was a guy, you know, was
sounds dangerous.
A doctor. He saw what he saw. Then he came, say, "Man, all right," had me to lie on my back, and you know. Check me out. I said, okay, no, it's cool. But I couldn't go back. All of a sudden, you know, the power. So, I had, luckily, you know, the people understood. I don't know. They never revolted.
So the crowd didn't.
They just understood. They saw.
Did you go after the show to a doctor? Another doctor?
No.
Or did you just go home?
No. I came back. Then after 2 days, I went for, scan.
Like a full brain scan?
All years and everything, you know.
Did they find anything?
No. My skin was cool. What do you call that? Where they also, they do the first one and then they, more like they put more, if you can put it in layman's terms, they put an ink on it so that they see exactly what's going on. I don't know what you call
that
it.
That sounds
but,
heavy.
But anyway.
Was it a blood flow thing they were looking
for? No, yeah, they were looking for. Any blood, you know, but there was nothing, because the my cousin said he was worried that it could be an aneurysm.
Yeah.
Because he said a lot of these entertainers in America, they would, because they don't stop, they keep on doing it until you know.
Right, and then the brain aneurysm clogs up one of the vessels.
Yes,
and your brain,
gone. But you know, yeah. I think it was more like a fatigue kind of thing.
Yeah, because you work so hard.
Yeah, you know, it was the third show I was having there, you know, three days in succession. But yeah, all right, now I'm fine now, you know.
I'm gearing up for another show, casually.
Yeah, I mean, you've won so many awards, but one of the things that I'm really amazed by with you, and it's something that I knew about almost, well, I knew about your music, but I knew this stuff about you too, is that you work for so many of those centers that look after kids and look after people with disabilities, yeah, and, you know, anybody who's pretty much less fortunate than you. Tagalani Home for the Disabled, mm, Sintemba, mm, Van Rijn Place of Safety in, mm, Benoni, Siyazi Zigabisa.
Zigabisa.
Right. Mm. And you look after all these places and you help them all. How much of your time do you have to spend with them?
I used to do that, but, you know, I was doing it the wrong way. I didn't know, you know, how to do it the right way. Mm. Where, you know, I would go and source out, you know, organization that can help me do it. I was doing it from my pocket.
Yeah.
You know. And
so in the beginning, your motivation was to do gigs.
Because, yeah, so I was doing it, you know, I would get money and then I would just get money, buy things, everything from my pocket, and then I go to them and buy them groceries, and, you know, we hang around. And
that's,
you know,
good enough, yeah, in some ways.
But then I couldn't sustain it any longer because now there was no money now.
Yeah.
All right. But they understood, you know.
And you've got
I love to see, you know, like young souls, you know, looking up to you, like, you know, it's like Father Christmas, you know, giving them, and, you know, see that happiness, you know, from the face that of this kid that don't have a father, mm, you know, yeah, you know, so, and even those some of those girls, like when I, and, you know, and count about them now, they some of them ran away from the place, and the, yeah.
You've also, I mean, you've got the one daughter and the two sons, right?
Yep.
Okay, and now your daughter Bontle, how old is she now?
She's 23.
Okay. Pile, we know, is in music. Mm. What about the others? Tell me about the others. Any other musicians?
They're all...
All talented?
They're all doing music. But I'm just discouraging them, everyone. Say, don't do it. Don't do it. But they're all into this thing, you know. And, you know, sometimes we just hang around, you know, in the room, and we start singing. Everyone just come. Harmony just come natural. And then we sing, tell the guitar, and just play.
You and know? Songs just come.
Oh, yeah.
That's an amazing thing. And obviously, within a family, do all of them have a singing voice?
Mm.
So when you're all doing harmonies, it must be beautiful.
Beautiful.
Wow. It's beautiful. The new Walk This Way.
Yeah. get some recording equipment in there when you guys start doing that. Sure.
You know,
sounds it's amazing.
It's beautiful, man. Yeah.
So you were one of, and this is something I want to argue with you about a little bit. You were one of the big supporters of the 90% quota at the SABC.
Yep.
When Claudi Motsoeneng was there.
Yeah.
Now that obviously has been a disaster because nobody's got paid anyway. Did you get paid?
No.
No. So, I mean, here you were supporting something that you thought would benefit artists.
Mm.
And those guys just, again, they haven't paid a single cent across to the rights organizations, and they haven't paid you in turn. So nobody scored.
Well, you know, for me, and I still maintain that I'm in South Africa. We need to play our own music, black or white.
Mm.
We have our own music here. And for the fact that the advertisers, they are the ones that are, you know, on the driving forces to know we need to have these Beyoncés, whatever, of this other world to play within the... And for me, excuse me, I believe and I still maintain that we need to love ourselves more.
I agree with you, and I think we should support, but we can't force it. And if you force a 90%, you saw what happens, the ratings all drop. It's not the advertisers, it's the listeners that disappear.
But what do you call the ratings? That is what I'm being... Okay.
It's the listenership.
Exactly.
So it's how many people are listening to a station.
It is because people have been so brainwashed into wanting to listen to foreign music.
What if they just like it?
No, but you are going to like something that is being played. You know, there was once this song by Judy Bouncer. Oh, if I can be in two places at the same time. I hated that song until I loved it. I found myself singing it. If I could be.
So they brainwashed you into liking that song.
Because I was hearing it every day. So now, if I can hear my music and my you know, my South African music, black or white, I'm going to love it, man. No, make no mistake.
Listen, I don't have a fight with you. I think we've got a hugely talented group of local musicians who deserve support. And there are too many of those musicians who don't make any money.
Oh, yes.
And there are too many of these radio stations that don't pay their rights money across. Yep. And then Samro must pay theirs as well.
Yep.
But you almost, don't you think it's better to just trust people to just play whatever they want to get the audiences? And when the audiences come, I mean, look, I understand a 20%, 30%, which is what a lot of the stations have. Because we used to play that. So it meant every third or fourth song you would play would have to be local. But 90%.
Yes.
Then you're brainwashing them the other way.
Yeah, 90% definitely it should be, man. Oh man, I was in New Orleans. Yes, they don't play nothing. They don't play nothing else. Even if it is in English, if it is not in American English, they don't play it on the radio. Even the British, there are very few, Adele and them, that you hear them. But otherwise, they don't play it at all. And just up, you know, in Uganda and all these places, they play Congo, they play their own music.
But these days, people will go on the internet.
Yes, but you know.
So if a station is playing music and you don't like it, let's just imagine if I forced them to play French music from beginning to end. It's a 90% French. And you... I said to you,
but if you're in France, it's cool.
No, sure, but yeah. I mean, if you these days the world is your
yeah.
You know, we can't be so local because there is the world to listen to. You can go on your internet and you can listen to anything you like from anywhere.
But then look what it did to American musicians. Look what it now they're all over because they are pumping it heavy. Our kids, they think they are Americans.
Look,
and. You know, because of what is being beamed, TV, radio, and everything else.
I got an email here from Beyonce. She says, "Tell Ringo, please, he's going to stop hating on me. I'm doing."
Oh no, I'm going. She's a very good advocate. I love her. But what I'm saying is, like, we cannot have. Oh, you know what I'm talking about. You know, and but it is yes. You know, I understand that 90% maybe it was too fast. You know,
people need choices, and I think we need more of our stuff shown off to the rest of the world and to our local people. But we don't want to brainwash anyone, like you said. You brainwash people into liking music. I don't know if that's true.
But then it has been like that. Come on, it has been like that. You know, the there was a time. Remember, I grew up in a place where radio, when radio was there was a radio band.
Mm.
I was there when it was radio band, where we were only hearing black music in our small black Bantu frequency. And I knew all those songs. And during those days, when there would be a concert by the Movers, by Babsi Mlange, it would be packed like it's a big...
But those were the days when you didn't have choice.
Okay, now
all you had was one station.
Yes, but now listen to this. Now, when that came, and then it moved into there was a time where I was there still when there was that integration of cultures and everything, and there was Juluka.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was Mango Groove, there was Ipeto, there was all those
Jabu Kanyile. You mentioned,
you know, yes, man. Still, we pull up big numbers, you know, in venues like this defunct Good Hope Center in Cape Town.
You remember that?
Oh yes, you know.
Used to be a place. Look at
it now. You know, and now it from there on, then it starts to. Then we were infiltrated by foreign music, heavy foreign culture.
But you make it sound like
yes, it is.
How about people chose it?
No, they didn't. No, it's you guys. You play it on radio all the time. That people start to believe that it is because when you keep on saying one lie after the other, people start to believe that it's the truth. So they sort of hear all these things. They believe that this is the only music that
Ringo,
they have.
Again, these days, kids are on their phones. They can get anything they want on their
phones.
Oh,
yes.
You're not going to be able to stop
them.
They
are going to look for what they've been given all these years. And if you close it here now, they're going to look for it somewhere else because they know it is out there. But they're gonna ignore what is theirs.
Yeah, but that's like when the taxi industry are saying to us, "You have to use us because we don't like Uber and it's not fair."
Ah, no, that is okay. No, you know? No. That is two different things. Those guys, they are just refusing to grow with times.
I'm telling you, this is
No, it's not the same thing.
Anyway, look, I must tell you, I mean, this is probably, I had to find one thing to fight with you about because I just love everything else about you and your music. I do. You're a tremendous talent. You're the most wonderful guy. You've done so much for South Africa.
For sure.
Your contribution and your continuing contribution is huge. Let's just remind people because I think you're doing one special show. You're doing a special at the... Let me just find
State Theater.
Let me do this properly and professionally for you. I'll just start it again. We'll cut that part out where I was looking for it. So you are doing a special at the South African State Theater, 30th of September. Tickets for the show can be purchased at various CompuTicket outlets, 150 to 350 Rand. Make sure you do not miss this. And, of course, we've got 10 studio albums we can look back on.
Oh, yeah.
Two live CD DVDs, one compilation album. And we can't wait to hear what's next.
Definitely, you know, I have taken all my music down. I'm sure you've been wanting to get hold of me.
Have you managed to get it all off the internet?
You, remember, I was talking to you there. That was last year. Mm. Yeah, for sure. Now it's dark. I want to be...
Because Prince did that. He would pull all his stuff off the internet. He didn't want people to get it for free.
Uh-huh.
And he wanted to protect it.
You know,
this is the way to do it.
Like now, when it come back now, it will be
strong
with my stamp, with none of these
unauthorized. Got you.
That's it.
Well, thank you, Ringo. It's always a pleasure to see you, sir.
Thank you very much. We'll check in
with you again soon. Please let us know what's next, and we'll come and support you at the State Theatre. And of course, we'll be at all your shows wherever you are.
Thank you very much, bro.
Thank you, sir. Ringo Madlingwazi, everybody. Here's what you need to know in the unnews. Listen to this. This is important. Always keen to create public distractions, the president has suggested he will be releasing an autobiography. While Twitter speculates on the title of the book, publishing houses are queuing up to finish, or rather to publish, what everyone is expecting to be the greatest work of fiction since Harry Potter. After successfully knocking crooked Hillary over with a golf ball, Donald Trump is hard at work at the driving range to hone his golf skills. He believes if he practices every day, he could become so skilled that he could hit balls at any rockets that North Korea could fire at the US in the future. Or better yet, pierce Kim Jong-un's security with a well-timed 3-iron. Trying to lay low this week after the 57-0 loss to New Zealand, Alistair Coetzee has instead had a busy start to the week. He's been presented with a variety of job offers from organizations looking to acquire his positivity. KPMG in particular would like him to address the media immediately and talk about the positives of working with the Guptas. Good luck, Alistair. Tomorrow between 6 and 9. Have an excellent day in the company of CliffCentral.com.
This is CliffCentral.com.